And I'm Chrissy Kuiper. I'm here with my co-host Todd Steed this afternoon with Tricia Jean Brady, local singer, songwriter. We also have historian Jack Neely and chair of the history department here at UT, Ernie Freeburg. And this is Dialogue. We're talking about the history of country music in East Tennessee, particularly in Knoxville. What happened here, how it kind of bloomed and then went away for a while. And then later on, we're going to talk about what the current country scene looks like here now. But in the meantime, you can call 974-5050. That's 865-974-5050. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can also get on our Twitter feed at WUOTFM and post any questions that you might have there. So again, I'm going to turn it over to Todd and Jack and Ernie and Tricia Jean to talk about commercialism of country music, because as Tricia Jean was saying before the break, a lot of these people, the early country music artists, came not just for the love of singing, but they made these recordings because they needed the money and they wanted the money. And, you know, we do live in a capitalistic empire, so it fits that they would want to make some money off of their talent. But now we're gonna kind of feed into the Knoxville scene and talk about a legendary force of commercialism here in town, Kaz Walker. Ernie has just written a book about Kaz Walker. That is, when is it coming out? When is it being published?
In about a month.
Okay, great. Yeah. Great.
And I should
Can't
say it was edited by a graduate student, Josh Hodge, and he and I worked together on this project. So
excellent.
Yeah. It's a collection of when I moved to Knoxville, I read Bruce Wheeler's History of Knoxville, which describes Kaz Walker as sort of the dark force in Knoxville over the 20th century. So I knew who he was from reading that book, and then I happened just by chance to buy his house, Kaz Walker's house, and as soon as I moved in there, I began to hear Kaz Walker stories, people knocking on my door and saying, you need to know who used to live here, and they would tell me these great stories. And so it took some years for me to get up the nerve to decide, okay, I need to gather these before they're gone. So Josh did a fine job of going out and interviewing about 20 people who worked with Kaz, some in the music business, his musicians, and then people who worked in his many other, you know, Kaz was a music promoter, but he was also a politician and a grocer and a marketer and a coon hunter. And, you know, so he sold himself on a lot of different levels.
He wore a lot of different hats.
Yeah. I think people probably know him best because of the music promotion piece of this, of course.
Well, I mean, his show was so famous that years after it was over, I moved here, and he's still one of the, I mean, when you talk about the history of Knoxville, he always comes up. He's always there somewhere. It's such a bright light in the history of Knoxville. And I've heard so many mixed stories about him that it's not like, oh, he's beloved, but, you know, in a way he is, but really, he's legendary.
Yeah,
you know? I mean,
that's what we were trying to capture, is the urban mythology. You know, historians responsibly go out and try to find out the truth. I was not so interested in that in this case. We were interested in multiple versions of the same stories about him throwing chickens off the roof in order to get, or burying Digger O'Dell in his parking lot in order to.
I still don't understand what.
Yeah.
How that happened, or
well,
how this poor man agreed to this.
Money.
I feel like that's what Kaz was. He had the money. He was backing everything. So, yes, he was. He's beloved because he backed a lot of wonderful things, but he was a wild man.
So where did his money come from? I mean, did it come from his
groceries
empire?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He was a poor guy from Sevier County. You know, he worked in the coal mines as a young man and up in Kentucky, and came down and opened a grocery, and then another, and he just kind of made a hit with the working class people. Basically, convinced the working people that they were his. He was their friend, and come to Kaz Walker's store, and I'll give you a good deal.
And wasn't that partly showcasing the music, you know, of the people, right?
It was pretty early on. I'm not sure when he became influential, but by the early 30s, he had a show on the radio called the Kaz Walker's Jug Band, and I don't know what it was like, whether he played with it sometimes or what, but he had it was just a short a short show at first, but by the 40s, he was a major force in
WROL. At some point in our book, he makes a note. We use some of his writings, and he said that that was really that really caused his grocery business to boom, is when he started to be on the radio and pushing the music.
I wouldn't doubt that. He was in the newspaper too. He had a column that he paid for, a column in which he kind of gave his opinion about things that kind of, and people who tended to agree with him really, really agreed with him. So it was and kind of he was a multimedia sort of a guy, celebrity back then. Yeah.
Well, I think he's most famous, at least the stories I heard, you know, it always is about Dolly Parton. And you know, launching on that program, and which was really not necessarily about commerce for her. She, you know, in order to make a career out of it, she had to leave Knoxville. So that was her start, and she was very, you know, apparently remains very grateful to the support that she got from him, and the Everly Brothers being thrown off the. Although Todd, you had a conversation with the great man Kaz Walker at one point late in his life, and you say that he denied that he ever threw the Everly Brothers off of his show for playing Butt Wiggling Music.
Yeah, so
Butt Wiggling Music. That's the best kind.
That's well,
exactly. It totally is.
Yeah, when we moved, my wife and I moved into North Knoxville, we were trying to find different routes to get to our house, you know, because we didn't really know that neighborhood so well, and I saw his name on a mailbox. And I figured, I deduced that he must live there. and I just called when I got in and said, can I come talk to Kaz about music? And it was his nurse. This was in the last year of his life. And I went over, and she goes, yeah. And I came in. He was combing his hair, trying to look good. And we talked about music for about 2 hours. And I went through every story I'd ever heard about Dolly Parton. The way he talked about Dolly was not... say like modern, but he did. You could tell that he actually like really, really appreciated her and her talent. And then I finally got to the Everly Brothers and I said, why did you fire? He goes, I didn't fire the Everly Brothers. That's not true. You didn't like them? I loved them. I loved those guys. No, I never fired them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they said he fired them, and everyone else said he fired them, but he denied it. And he talked about how much he loved them. So. Anyway, it was 2 hours of just absolute joy, and he ended up selling me 2 books.
Wow.
Before I walked out of there.
Of course he did.
Yeah, I was like,
forever the salesman.
One of us has been had, or both of us, I don't know.
But you didn't go away with some Superderm salve?
No, he was out.
He was out of salve, yeah.
So, yeah, I just had to make my own.
For a while after I moved in, I actually received a check every once in a while in the mail, you know, in feeble handwriting from Arkansas with a check in it for please send me some more Superderm salve, which was his, you know, sort of patent medicine that was supposed to cure hemorrhoids, cancer, and mange on a dog.
Well,
I think it
sounds like we need that right now. I don't need that right now.
Well, anybody who's tuning in, and by the way, if you're listening and you want to make a comment or a question, give us a call, 974-5050. We're talking about Kaz Walker because in Knoxville, as was pointed out, in the 30s, he sort of started spotlighting country music. So we talked about Dolly Parton. We've talked about the Everly Brothers, who were not just country stars, but, you know, made it into pop and were, you know, really popular everywhere, not just in the country scene. Who else was on his show?
People on his show. One thing about Kaz is that he was more open-minded about bluegrass than other folks were in the 40s. Bluegrass, it's hard to believe now, was considered kind of a new, shocking new thing that wasn't ready for primetime radio in the 40s when Bill Monroe was starting out. But when Flatt and Scruggs split away from Bill Monroe, they came to WROL and performed there. And I assume that they played on Kaz's show. Mm-hmm. They also played on other shows on WROL. But the Osmer Brothers, lots of the early bluegrass guys.
Leuven Brothers,
right. On Kaz's show. But before that, let's not forget the other station, which was Kaz Walker's Mortal Enemy. WROL, he was always on WROL until he went to WBR and other things in the 50s. But WNOX in the 30s and 40s was Lowell Blanchard's baby. And WNOX, I think Lowell Blanchard was from Chicago. Had a country show in Chicago before he came to Knoxville and to head up what he called Midday Merry-Go-Round, which I think was inspired by the phenomenal success of this guy who'd been here for years named Roy Acuff, and who began fiddling and developed this kind of crazy extremely enthusiastic following in the mid-30s. Mm-hmm. And I think Roy Acuff was the guy that really got country radio taken off. And he was, Roy Acuff was very aggressive, pugilistic, almost kind of guy who would play people off against each other. And he went from WNOX to ROL and back and forth. And I've read his autobiography, and he doesn't mention Kaz Walker, but he did play on WROL in the same time that Kaz had a show there. But he was playing on both stations before he put this thing together and got a major recording called The Great Speckled Bird, with the first Dober recording ever heard in popular music. And it really caught on, and that's what took him to Nashville. He just went to Nashville for the.
Was that recorded here?
No, it was recorded in Chicago, but it was recorded with a Knoxville band that went to Chicago. Gotcha. For the recording studio. Yeah, but it was he picked it up, I think, from a like an evangelical band of buskers downtown to the song, and then he got this guy Clell Summey, who was a Dobroist, but his band was called the Crazy Tennesseans, and they kind of prettied it up when he went to Nashville. But what they called the Smoky Mountain Boys, but he became just a national phenomenon, and as soon as he hit Nashville, practically he was immediately on the Grand Ole Opry, and everybody by 1938, everybody in the country knew who Roy Acuff was. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and something interesting in the Ken Burns documentary, they talk about Roy Acuff, and they were talking about the in World War II, that on Guam. No, maybe it was what was the really big one early on, the big island early on in World War II, the big battle, Guadalcanal.
Yeah.
And they were saying the Japanese soldiers were saying bad things about different Americans. And they would say, you know, Roy Acuff is the devil.
Yeah.
And they yelled this to the American soldiers to insult them.
Yeah, yeah,
that's how
yeah.
famous he was.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You're right. I've heard that. I've heard that too. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
But Roy came, and he was here. He was here for probably 5 or 6 years, and suddenly, I mean, just went, you know, caught fire in the late 30s. Went to Nashville. It was only after he left that Chet Atkins showed up from Union County, and began doing things with the guitar nobody ever done before. And he was speaking about genres. He thought of himself as a jazz guitarist in those days.
Right.
But anyway, those were two big things that were going on. And he was mainly on WNOX too. So those were going on with or without Kaz Walker, perhaps, but Kaz might have been part of some of that. But
so the midday merry-go-round, was that pre-Kaz Walker?
That was during Kaz Walker,
okay.
but really kind of in fact, they say that guys would their radio would quit, and they would take it into the radio store downtown. And they would say, my Kaz Walker tube's burned out, but I still have my Lowell Blanchard tube. but they thought they needed certain tubes for certain people they couldn't pick up because of what was burned out. But
I remember, Jack, you telling me that when I was launching into this project, you suggested that Kaz played an important role in giving a voice to bluegrass and sort of cutting edge, the people's music in a way that some of the other ones did not. And I put that to some of the musicians that we interviewed who had played with Kaz, who were outstanding, you know, top-of-the-line musicians. And they said they were, some of the best musicians in the country on the Kaz Walker show.
Yeah.
But there was also anybody else who wanted to play. You know? So, you know, if the second grade that wanted to sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat, he'd put them on there because he knew that...
If it looked like their parents would buy groceries, he'd put
them
on
once. Exactly. They love, you know.
Give the people what they want.
So I think, you know, whether this was a commercial enterprise, it clearly made money for Kaz, but I think it was really more of a community forum for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, it was a launching pad for this a few people that we remember.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
But there were thousands of people who played on that, and really, you know, getting at country music as something which is really part of the culture, not just something that's commercialized.
Yeah.
I think that, not just Kaz Walker, but all those radio shows. That's a lot. That's, you know, we see a little vestige of it right now, I think, with the Blue Plate special on WDVX. But
definitely.
Otherwise, that's gone.
Yeah, and we need to remember, whether he fired the Everly Brothers or not, he was the first one to put them on together as a duo.
True enough.
So he introduced them, because I guess he figured their folks would buy groceries, too.
But. And now what about, now their folks were performers as well, which
right.
I didn't know.
That's right. They played as a family. They arrived in Knoxville as a family act. They've been in Iowa for some years, and they arrived in Knoxville as a four-piece family act, and even their mom played bass, I believe. But but they came. The Everly Brothers split off and began playing with rock and roll when they were on WROL on Kaz's show in the mid 50s, 54, 55.
I.e., butt wiggling music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Well, we do have a call, so let's take a call. We have Kay on the line from Knoxville. Hi, Kay.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. What's your question?
Well, it's not a question, it's a comment. I was wondering if anybody had mentioned, or if anybody knew or had heard of Kaz Walker's Kennel Man. He had coonhounds, and I didn't know whether anybody had spoken about that or not.
We haven't mentioned that as yet. Thank you for...
Kind of an...
Oh, no, go ahead.
He was kind of an interesting character. He had a place out off on a street called Peachtree off of Western Avenue. And you'd go down and park after hours and by his house, and you could walk past the kennel dogs and go in a place. And he was a bootlegger. And he sold bottle and bond whiskey. And people were always in there playing dice. His name was Fred. And he looked to me like a very light-skinned African-American. But his wife, who looked white to me, said that he was Canadian Indian.
Oh.
And Fred was kind of a character. He had all kinds of ideas about the conspiracy that killed JFK. And he was a place that I used to enjoy going, and some interesting people showed up there at different times.
I bet.
That is fabulous.
Hey, thank you for calling in, Kay.
Well, I heard a lot about...
No, you're welcome.
I heard other things about Kaz's coondogs, because he had a lot of them, apparently, in the backyard of the house that I now live in. And I asked the neighbor what that was like to have, you know, on a hot summer night, to have 15, 20 coon dogs howling in the backyard. And she said, oh, yeah, we just had to sleep on the other side of the house in the summertime.
You're not going to win if you're taking on Kaz Walker.
Right.
You know, if he's willing to punch city council members and things, you know.
Yeah.
You know what, though? That shows me how open-minded he is, though. At that time, I mean, to have anybody that might be of any mixed blood in our area working for you is a pretty big deal, and I think that's pretty awesome.
Well, again, we've come to kind of what I want to talk about in the next segment, which is I'm getting an idea from the conversation of the time period. Like, it's clear that in the 30s, there was a transition being made, you know, from the recordings at Bristol to Knoxville and the commercialization of music here, and then people moving on to Nashville. So we'll talk about that when we come back, I think, from our break, and we'll bring us up to the present. You're listening to Dialogue here on WUOT. I'm Chrissy Kuiper with Todd Steed, Trisha Jean Brady, and Jack Neely, and Ernie Freeberg, and we're talking about country music in Knoxville. So give us a call, 974-5050, and we'll be right back after this break.